Shalom leYehudim, shalom leBnei Noach, shalom leGoyim. It's the evening of the fourth day, Kaf beMenachem Av, Parashas Ekev Tavshin Ayin Vav, the evening of the third day, Tuesday, 23 August 2016. Webcasting from Israel under attack. We're always under attack, if not full-blown attack, every day. On Sunday, the enemy fired artillery at us from Gaza, one mortar. Admittedly, it was just one mortar, I think, and did not do any physical damage, but it was an attack nonetheless. In the past, Israel has replied, for years now under Bibi, every time such an eventuality pops up, by destroying some shack or something connected to Hamas, even though it knows Hamas did not order the attack and that Hamas actually enforces the ceasefire. Israel knows it was a gang that opposes Hamas, and because, fasten your seatbelts now, the gang thinks Hamas is not Islamic enough. It's an old story. Not aggressive enough, really, against al-Yahud. The latest news was that it's called the Friends of the Prophets gang. Leastwise, they claim credit on Twitter. And hours later, that account was shut down. Nonetheless, after Israel's routine reprisal strike, 10 hours later, Israel returned with greater force. Started bombing and did not stop for 2 hours. Tanks fired into the zone from outside of it, struck by the air, I think, were some 50 targets. And all around, observers see in this a new policy at work, though toward what end is not yet clear. J-Post's Josie Melman today cited a senior military source who said that the new policy was designed by Chief of Staff Lieutenant General Gadi Eisenkot, and approved by Prime Minister Netanyahu and the former Defense Minister Moshe Yaalon. Others speculate that this was Lieberman, the new Defense Minister's more aggressive initiative, but I doubt that without the Prime Minister's approval, he could just order this up and on his own. So the purpose remains a bit obscure, what they want to achieve by this, though the reactions of other players were certainly interesting. Despite the vote last week in Ankara to renew diplomatic relations with Israel, there was venom in Turkish words. They said the raid lacked all proportion. Turkey said that despite the restoration of relations, it will continue to defend the Palestinian struggle against Israel's actions which are against international law and human conscience, close quote. How is Israel to deal with the Muslim world whose leaders can make the surreal claim that international law opposes Israel firing back at those who fired Israel? This appears to be classical Muslim thinking, Muslim ethics. Jews do not have the right to hit back when hit by a believer. That's the way it was century in and century out for Jews living under the Islamic, if not jackboot, then sandal, or yellow Turkish slipper with upturned toes. By contrast, a truly revolutionary event came out of Cairo, where Foreign Minister Samah Shoukry rejected the word terrorism to describe Israel's response. This is truly an amazing turn of events, though, as usual, the shapers of the news have missed it. The foreign minister in Egypt, in his office, met with a group of high school students, one of whom asked why Israel's killing of Palestinian children is not thought of in Egypt, meaning by the government, an act of terrorism. And in reply, he said that the foreign minister, that there's no evidence of any link between Israel and any terrorist organization. There's nothing that leads to that conclusion, he said. He said, history has made Israel very sensitive to security issues and tightly controls its territories and border crossings. And this is the same foreign minister who visited Israel last month, the first such visit in 9 years. Shoukry said Israel wrestles with many challenges, and said the following. For an activity to be defined as an act of terrorism, there has to be an agreed-upon international definition of terrorism, and from a legal point of view, for the time being, there is none. Close quote. This is a subject I take up in my book, The Paralysis at the United Nations, for decades now, in the matter of this inability to come up with an agreed-upon definition of terrorism because of one major sticking point. The West wants to include the terror that Muslims inflict on us Jews, but the anti-Jew Muslim countries and allies insist, no, that's freedom fighting. 1974, when that reptile of a man, Arafat, addressed the General Assembly, he defined terrorism as something with an unjust cause. Acts committed for a cause that is just cannot be terrorism, no matter what they do. His appearance had been protested before he came to the UN. The invitation was protested because he had been a career terrorist. So in his speech, he addressed the issue and made clear he was not a terrorist. He and his bombers and plane hijackers were freedom fighters against the real terrorists, the Israelis, whose every act of violence against Palestinians has been an act of terrorism. This includes striking back when attacked. Israel's self-defense is also terrorism in his mind. And here we are more than a biblical generation later. And here are these teenagers in Egypt, surely among the best and the brightest, or they would not have been chosen to meet the foreign minister in his office and granted a meeting to ask him questions. All of whom, or at least this one does, thinks like Arafat, 1974. And for sure he's not alone. In the ocean of Muslims he lives in, reacting to Shukri's refusal to describe Israeli operations as terrorism, a Hamas mouthpiece in Qatar, one Hussam Badram, spit this out, quote, "He who does not see the crimes of the Zionist occupation as terrorism is blind." And so these words from the Egyptian foreign minister following his recent visit are a further sign of the alliance of necessity between Israel and Egypt now, both countries attacked by violent Muslims who believe their faith gives them license to murder people at random. We also saw here last month, I think it was, a visit by a former Saudi general. Also an amazing turn of the screw of history. And all because the whole region is faced with Iran, Obama's protege country. Iran with designs on a new Persian empire, if no longer a Zoroastrian, but a Shiite one. Egypt, of course, reacted as mildly as it did, because it knows Israel in Gaza strikes at the same jihadis Egypt strike at in the Sinai Peninsula. They believe this Friends of the Prophet are Daesh people. Egypt's benign response, of course, is no reflection of a broad-based feeling in that country. No sign that it's becoming friendlier to Israel. In J-Post today, Herb Kanaan reminded readers that just last month, an Egyptian MP, one Tofik Okasha, met with the Israeli ambassador and called for normal relations with Israel and for his trouble was booted from Egypt's parliament. Then again, it really doesn't matter what the masses in Egypt think, for they're not in charge. The correct form of government in Egypt is military dictatorship. Half the people are illiterate. They have no education as a result. Literally, by being illiterate, think differently. Not only do they lack knowledge gained through reading newspapers and books, the contents, the very act of learning to read changes the way the mind works. So long as Egypt and so much of Arabia remains illiterate, an Islamic democracy is impossible, and the system of government, military dictatorship, has been the best so far. Though I'm beginning to think that even in the West, democracy is dying for a similar reason. The creation of an electorate that is just uneducated, and in addition, the emasculation of the American people as lovers and defenders of liberty and freedom and good government. I don't understand how so much is known about the corruption of Mrs. Clinton and Mr. Clinton, but nothing seems to be happening in the way of indicting these people. Where are the lawyers to file a complaint in some court demanding that this woman be arrested and charged with serious crimes? I would love to see her on the 7 o'clock news, handcuffed and led into a police car. How could it be that the head of the FBI reads off a list of crimes, misdemeanors, and felonies before the whole world committed by this woman, and then refuses to call for an indictment? What's going on here? And the people are standing for it. This woman is known to have had an unsecure server in which she sent out sensitive material. This woman whose gal Friday is this Uma Abedin, a Saudi whose associations to the Muslim Brotherhood have been long known, with no action ever taken. What is going on? When so many people, polled every day, continue to express support for this woman, are these people brain dead? So another story of note this August day, when the world slows down, besides the major reprisal in Gaza the other night, to what end is not yet clear, another story is the endless civil war in Israel in general, and in the army especially, between Jews and Israelis of Jewish extraction. Another way of describing this war is the ongoing struggle between the secular and the religious, played out lately over beards. Inside the army, a new group of religious soldiers come together to highlight and protest against what they feel is discrimination and disrespectful abuse, seen in the policy of having a beard and the behavior of some commanders forcing soldiers to cut off their beards when these are recruits who have never done that since their beard came in. And as is so common, there is so much confusion over policy and implementation, and nowhere have I seen the Army explain why having a beard is taboo. If it's dangerous, maybe it's justified. Or if it's just a demand for absolute military uniformity, then it's not justified. Or is it the bigotry of the aggressive anti-religious Jews in Israel? One such belligerent NGO here is called Be Free Israel. Israel Chofshi, that's not a good translation, but that's what they put out. They want action taken against any of the 300 rabbis who recently wrote a letter in support, 300 of them, support of Rabbi Yigal Levenstein, who gave that speech to fellow national religious rabbis concerned about the aggression inside the IDF against religious soldiers when he used the term sote min, or sexual deviant. Israel Chofshit claims that those signatories who receive salaries from the Ministry of Religious Services must be held to the same standards as other civil servants, meaning speaking out against sodomy is not allowed. Well, the Ministry of Religious Services stuck by its support for the 300 rabbis who have the right, they said, to express their views on matters in the Torah. And I would add to this general proposition the fact that sodomy is one of those subjects. The executive director of Israel Chofshit, one Mickey Gitzin, said in an interview on Ynet that the ministry's statement becomes Levenstein's statement. They are one and the same. He says these rabbis are basically above the law and the ministry is supporting them. Quote, every rabbi is allowed to say anything that he wants, and it doesn't matter whom he hurts. We need to remember that in the case of these rabbis, they're civil servants, they're functionaries, close quote. And for sure, this Mickey Gitzin is blind to the contradiction between the name of his group, Free Israel, Israel Free, and his objection here, in his words, to a rabbi being able to say anything he wants. And it does not matter whom he hurts. And I ask again, as I did at the end of the previous segment, what's going on here? Since when has it become unacceptable to say something that hurts someone else? Say I, a capitalist, in debate with a communist, make an irrefutable argument against communism, and my rival's faith is shaken. She feels hurt, and so I shouldn't have said that. What is this totalitarian demand made by a major slice of contemporary Western culture that says no one has the right to think there's anything wrong with sexual deviance and to express his opinions in public about this matter? I find this all very strange. In the IDF, religious soldiers are complaining that some officers have made them visit mosques and churches to pay their respects when we're not supposed to enter those buildings. There has been friction for years in the army over the appearance and social gatherings, so to speak, of female singers when classical Judaism rightly understands that there is a measure of ogling involved in watching and listening to a commonly attractive female on stage singing. When that kind of physical stimulation belongs at home, in the bedroom, with one's wife. Of course, in their ignorance, the enlightened think that Orthodox soldiers walk out of such entertainments because women disgust them. This like Yitzhak Rabin, in his inaugural speech as Prime Minister in 1992, citing the story of the Gentile prophet Bilam, saying that this will be a people that dwells alone. For Rabin and his sabra society of ignoramuses, they miss the context in which this is said, in which everything that comes out of that man's mouth, Bilam, is praise. There is a grand canyon of ignorance separating on one side Torah knowledgeable and observant Jews in Israel and today's secular Israeli people. Ergo, the constant friction in the IDF between the two communities. With someone like Mickey Gitzin furious at religious Jews who he believes want to make him religious and take away his freedom. His group is Israel Chofshit, Be Free, Israel, free of the strictures of Jewish nationhood that for thousands of years was defined by belief and behavior, theory and practice. But since the early days of the Zionist movement, there have been secular missionaries claiming that observing the religion may have made sense in the diaspora, but now that the Jews have returned home, you can throw off the religion like an old and tattered coat.
מי לימד אותך להיות אישה? אותך לבכות כמו רחל, לחלום כמו יוסף, להתגעגע כיעקב. מי לימד אותך לקרוא חומה על גג בעין רואה? מי לימד אותך להיות אישה ציפור על ית גג? מי לימד אותך להיות אישה ציפור על ית גג? מי לימד אותך להיות אישה? החלו לבצבץ, מעלים תקוות סמויות מן העין, ומתח חיים חצו אוהבים שקופים.
Listening to www.deprogramprogram.com, broadcasting from the hills of Judea. I'm Shai Ben Tekoa. And now, as for the link posted with this webcast, when I'm done, please check it out. You got to. It's 7 minutes of a video from Memory.org's Jordanian Tea Capture, in which a so-called Palestinian-Jordanian political analyst, Mohammed Al-Tamimi, is interviewed, sort of. You don't have to watch the whole 7 minutes. Maybe half will do, to witness what Israel is up against in our struggle for peace from these neighbors of ours. You notice immediately a man having more or less the anti-Semitic equivalent of an epileptic fit. A man enraged by the existence of Israel. A man out of control. Though I hope you see something else in this rant. He is obviously off the rails, and that's the first thing you notice. Consumed with hatred. But notice the content of his words. How he repeatedly makes pleas for his beloved Palestine in the hands of the Zionist occupier or oppressor. Oh, how he aches for the Holy Land, their precious homeland, and so on and so forth. It's one Jewish Zionist emotion after another that Arabs like him have stolen from us and don't even know it. There's no record in history of any Palestinians calling this land their beloved Palestine, their holy homeland. It's all plagiarized from us. What you're looking at is a micro specimen of the entirety of Islam, which is a religion that was stolen from Jews. The man is positively exploding with feelings for his captive ancient Palestine, whenever in history was a Palestinian people here who did anything for the welfare of Palestine. As I note in my book, when the first experimental agricultural station for agronomists to study the soils here, Mikveh Yisrael, was founded in 1807, established, and there was not one public road in Palestine. A generation after railroads had begun to run in Europe as a commercial venture and service, there were still no railroads in Palestine, and there would not be for another 30 years. Where was this man's patrimony at that time? What were they doing for Palestine, as the Jews were doing something for Eretz Yisrael? The man's mind is stuffed with material content pilfered from us. This video is evident of the divine genius found in the famous Midrash, thousands of years old, that describes the Arabs with one word, thieves. Ishmael is a thief. A couple of weeks ago, the police here estimated there are 50,000 stolen Jewish cars on the roads in Arab Judea and Samaria. I see them all the time, nice cars. They've been stolen from the coastal plain. And not only do they steal your car and other property, like the farmers in the Beersheba area who are forever being burglarized, they steal your religion. They steal your movement for national rejuvenation and don't even know it. For sure, this lunatic adherent of a religion symbolized by the moon, a symbol of lunacy for thousands of years, is not aware that everything he says about Palestine is stolen goods, hot goods, from the Jews. Or maybe his rage is a function of his unconscious awareness that everything he is saying is stolen. That's why he's raging. What is his accusation? What is their accusation? The Jews, the occupation, stole Palestine from us, when the truth is the other way around. They want to steal Palestine from the Jews. This is an amazing video, and hardly the first time we've seen people on Arab TV go berserk over one thing or another. The behavior I've never seen on TV in the West. But again, it's not only his rage, but the contents of his mind that bears scrutiny. Okay, that's it for this Tuesday night, and I'll be back, God willing, on Thursday. Until then, Laila Tov, Me'eretz Yehuda.